This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to this edition of Sharp Money. Dave Ross, Joe Serrallo here at the Fabulous D in downtown Las Vegas. Joe, great to be back with you. Wyatt is, of course, our star producer on the ones and twos today. How was your night in Las Vegas? I know this is your first full week in Vegas.
Yeah, first full week here for VSiN.
Anything entertaining of note last night?
Last night was kind of low key. Had to, you know, the most entertainment,
you can't push
I'd
it
say.
Every night in Vegas.
No, you got to pace yourself, right? Because I always say Vegas is a two night town. So if you're here for six nights, like I am right now, it's my fourth Vegas trip, my second full week. First full week out here was Radio Row this year for the Super Bowl. But I think the most excitement of my night actually came at the airport, where I had to go pick up my girl. She's joining me for the back end of the trip.
Okay.
And she touched down 7:40. I was, you know, hanging out in a parking lot like a Target, you know, near the airport,
just
so I could go pick her up with ease.
Waiting and waiting.
And she couldn't deplane for about an hour and a half because the president's plane was leaving Vegas. And, I mean, Secret Service, according to her, just as far as the eye could see, cops, Secret Service. And there was a huge, tremendous line of planes that could not deplane because President Biden was getting out of town, headed back to Delaware.
That qualifies as just a run-of-the-mill night for you?
Yeah.
With president of the United States holding up your girlfriend?
Vegas is right now Joey C and Joey B both in town. So a lot going on in Vegas.
I got a good one. This is back when I was working with UNLV football. It was 2014. Hillary Clinton had landed. So I think she was Secretary of State at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were in these old Allegiant jets, the old plane jets, where the air didn't come from up top. It came from out like this. And we got stuck on the tarmac for like 2 hours in 110-degree heat.
Oh,
it was so bad. I'll never forget the flight attendant says, well, if you take the pamphlet and wave it back and forth, it makes a great fan.
Oh, you think?
I hate everybody
that was
here.
The remedy for 110 on the tarmac for 2 hours?
Oh, it was awful.
But Wyatt, at least it's a dry heat.
Yeah,
right?
It's dry all the time.
You know, I'll never forget. We were in an old jet to where you didn't have the AC coming from the little tubes where you can adjust. It was from the top of the plane.
You know, it's funny. That might have been a campaign trip, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. I think John Kerry was Secretary of State. Didn't they switch? Wasn't she Obama's first term and Kerry was the second because she was gearing up?
Yeah. It was 2014. I just remember that.
I think she was gearing up for the run.
Yeah, we were going to Arizona, which we got smacked really bad. So it was just an all-around
so did she in Arizona.
So you guys have both been held up by politicians in your time and had
Vegas.
To wait on the tarmac. But at least you were at the Target so you could maybe get a drink and get a cup of coffee and hang out there.
There's another one. I know we're deviating off topic.
It's July. This is what we got to do to keep the show going.
I'm a play-by-play announcer for UNLV's women's basketball team. So we were flying in one time back home. And all of a sudden, we're like starting to descend. And I've flown into Vegas a million times. I'm looking around. I'm like, this isn't normal. And we landed in Boulder City Airport. I didn't know. And I asked, why are we here? It goes, the president was at the airport at the time, so they shut everything down. So I was like, oh, great.
Welcome to being a swing state. Yes. They're always going to be here. They're always going to try to get those votes.
Presidents play poker, too.
Yes, they do. By the way, got a great show lined up. Josh Booty is going to join us, of course, LSU legend. Talk some SEC football and some NFL with Josh. Dan Vreeland is going to join the program to begin hour number two. Love catching up with Danny. Got an MMA event this week in UFC 304 in England next week, so we'll get Dan's expertise there. And Aaron Halterman is going to join us in the third hour to talk some Big 12 football. And again, misnomer, because now we're just going, you know, Big 10, it's 18 teams, but we don't go Big 18. I just switch the numbers. That's all I ask. I don't ask for a whole lot of things in life. That's all I want to know.
Are they up to 18 now?
18, the Big 10.
My goodness. I mean, it was
branding.
When I got
it's branding, but it doesn't make sense.
The Pac 10 did it to the Pac 12.
They were the Pac 8.
Well, look what it did to them.
They were the Pac 8.
Yeah, they lost everybody.
They went to the
Pac
10. They went to the Pac 12. Now they're the Pac 2. But at least they switched the name.
Let's just be honest. You know how much money they're going to have to spend to change the logo?
Yeah, but it's more merch for the kids. Yeah. Get your Pac 12.
Do it for the children.
It's like the Yankees. It's nostalgia. You're not changing the uniform.
I think when I got into it, when I was a kid getting into college football, it was the Big Ten had 11. That was the weird part. Penn State was the 11th team, and that is my favorite team, ironically. And now 18 is nuts. I mean, UCLA and Rutgers, you can't make it up, guys. Imagine a women's volleyball game on a Tuesday night between UCLA and Rutgers. Hey, you're going to miss class for three straight days because we have to go to Brunswick, New Jersey. That's a fun one.
But remember, the Big 12 was the Big 8. Then they went to the Big Ten. Then they went to the Big 12. They
was the Big 12 the Big Ten, or did it just go Big 8 to Big 12?
They went 8 to 12.
You're okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they never coincided, I guess.
Right.
That would have been confusing.
Big 10A and Big 10B.
So last night, while you were waiting for your girlfriend to finally get off the tarmac there, I probably around that same time was trying to figure out when the British Open was going to begin over at Royal Troon in Scotland. Finally figured it out. Stayed up most of the night watching the golf, as I love to do each and every year. And Joe, my simple question to you is, and there is a point of contention here, even on the network and certainly in golf circles, do you go the Open Championship or the British Open? Because, like, the Revolutionary War was a long time ago. How long are they still going to be upset about old 1776? Can't we move
right?
on? Yeah.
And by the way, it's not the U.S. Revolution. It's the Revolution.
The Revolution.
No, I call it the British Open. I actually got judged yesterday on this show. I got corrected on air by a man to my right.
No. I didn't correct on air. I corrected
off air. Oh, was it off air?
Yeah,
okay. You had the decency to correct me off air.
I said
the British Open. I was teeing up a guest. Jeff Ulrich joined the show to talk about it. And I was teeing Jeff up, and I said the British Open. And Wyatt, as soon as we got to commercial, was like, the Open.
Well, let's just be honest. If
Should I say it with an accent next time, too? Would that make everyone happy?
If you're looking to bet it, you know, like, I want to bet Tiger Woods for the British Open, the guy's going to look like, I don't know what you're talking about. You got to be right. If you look on DraftKings, it says the Open Championship.
If you wanted to bet Tiger Woods, you probably weren't right.
Yeah, and by the way, I did bet Tiger Woods to make the cut. That is looking disastrous today. And really, look, this is what Scotland is, right? Scotland golf is going to be, you're going to get all four seasons, as they say, maybe in one day.
Yeah.
And Tiger had a little bit of that. It started off okay. He had a birdie on three. He's one under par. And then the weather conditions were rough for Tiger and his grouping in the middle of the round, and you saw it really affect Tiger. So he went from one under and shot all the way up to six over, got a late birdie back, and then gave a couple more back, seven under. I believe even a bogey on 18 to finish. So for Tiger Woods to make the cut tomorrow, he's probably going to have to shoot an under par round. I do not see that happening.
Yeah.
So I think my plus 250 on Tiger making the cut is dead. And I did kind of buy into this would be the easiest course for him to walk. It's not totally hilly like Augusta National is or some of our American courses. I don't know how much of it we can just say it's the body anymore. I think we have to start looking at Father Time and just saying this is what it is. And if I'm expecting it to get better, maybe I'm blinded by nostalgia because it did not look good today. I'm going to watch Tiger as long as he's playing competitive golf until he doesn't play competitive golf anymore.
Of course.
Because I never, unlike Colin Montgomery, I don't retire the all-time greats. I want them to keep playing.
Yeah.
And we did see another, you could say, all-time great. I know he's not necessarily the most popular golfer these days. Lefty, Phil Mickelson, have a pretty darn good day. Started off a couple over par and then leveled it out. Ended up with a birdie on 18 to finish two over par. And I believe right now we'll figure out how the rest of the groupings come in. But only six off the lead. So not a bad first day for Lefty. And again, guys like John Rahm also in that same mix around two over par. So I think if you're still within six shots going into three more days, I think you're live. I think you still have an outside shot. Now, look, can Phil win the tournament? That I don't know. But I think his day today said, I'm going to be around at least for the weekend here at Royal Troon. And we all remember what he did back with Henrik Stenson when he shot 17 under par to finish in second place. I don't expect that. But sometimes the nostalgia, the body clock remembers and goes, oh, I played darn well. I beat the rest of the field except for the winner that week. I think Phil's got to be feeling pretty darn good about where he sits.
Yeah, and I'm feeling pretty darn good about where he sits right now. You know, Dave, believe it or not, when you speak, I actually do listen more often than not.
I love it.
We were talking about this Tuesday on VEASAN Primetime together, and we were talking about that Stenson-Phil year where Stenson won it at, what, 20, 21 under?
20 under par.
Phil was 17 under, and then third place dropped off to 6 under. And Phil's familiarity with Royal Troon, his success in the Open or the British Open, whichever you want to call it, regardless of the course, it just made me, you know, when people who know the game of golf much better than I do talk about this course in particular, they call it a very technical course.
Yep.
And when you've got a past and a track record of success on a course like this, it makes me intrigued to buy in. So I bought in. I went, you know, I wasn't taking them to win. I rarely ever bet golf. I didn't take anyone to win, but I took a top 20 flyer at 7-1 on Phil. Now,
good
I
number.
Also did that on Stenson at 7-1, same price, because like Phil, he has the history and the track record of success there.
Sure.
And then just for S's and G's, I took Ernie Els at 27
to 1. Old Man Ernie.
And I think Old Man Ernie is like third from the bottom right now. So that was a throwaway. But this Phil ticket's live. And hey, you know, three tickets, three long shot top 20 finishes. If sure. one of them hits, I'm turning in a nice profit. So I'll take it.
And I like those markets because it's so hard to hit outrights. Look, yeah. our guys on long shots, and hopefully you checked it out. I got to hop in there and host that show this week with Kelly, Kelly Bidlin. And, of course, Matt Brown will be back next week to do the show as he normally does. And those guys are fantastic at hitting outrights. But a lot of times I'm going to play those placement markets as well. And I don't know that anybody better in the network than Wes Reynolds when it comes to hitting those outrights too. So those guys will give you their probably top five. And then you start to look to those placement markets like you did. I think that's a very smart wager on Phil at 7-1. You're going to be live for the weekend. You're going to have action. That's for sure. Because I think Phil, barring a disaster,
you
should make the cut. Be right there. You never know what's going to happen with the weekend. And what you really don't know is what's going to happen with the weather. So that's something to keep an eye on. If you can forecast Scottish weather, then you should just play the lottery because it's almost impossible from hour to figure out what's going to happen. I want to make one other point. Scottie Scheffler drifted a little bit for Scottie Scheffler's standards to 5-1 before he teed off to begin his day today. He's on the 18th hole here. He's even par, 5 off the lead right now. You know where his number is? 5 back? It got shorted 50 cents. He's plus 450.
Plus 450, which is where he was earlier in the week.
Yes.
As
and
the favorite.
Then he went to 5-1.
He's 5 off. Well, I mean, the guy's got a killer instinct. That's what they're capping.
But, Joe, that drives me crazy. Why won't you let him drift? Just let him drift like 9-1.
8-1, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
8-1, 9-1. The guy's 5 shots back. Like, can't we get a good number in Scottie Scheffler?
That's wild.
It remains unbettable for me. I did not bet him before the tournament. I won't do it again at those numbers. Much more to get to. Josh Booty next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up now for our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you're going to gain access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems, and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our all-new special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, features, props, and awards, and best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Do not wait. Sign up before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Joe Cerullo. I almost did it. Joe Cerullo. Joe Cerullo. But wait,
as
see the Italian.
Italian,
the Italian, right? The, Joe Cerullo. But how's the what's the Italian pronunciation?
Joey Cirallo. And if you want to hear more Italian, you might hear it when we get to our top five movie segment at the end of the show.
Is that a tease?
I might be speaking a little Italian during that segment.
I cannot wait. Could you have could you do a gangster movie if they asked you to and said can you speak Italian?
Yeah.
You could do it.
Absolutely. And I'm not by any means saying I'm fluent because I'm not. I grew up in a household where the only Italian we really spoke were the bad words. I never actually learned the language to get to the point of being conversational until college when I took it as an elective for 2 years. But if they gave me a script, yeah, I'd be able to knock it out of the park, frankly.
Joe Cirullo. How'd I do?
Cirullo. Giuseppe Cirullo.
I can't get it. Let's welcome into the program Josh Booty, former NFL quarterback, and of course did a great job at LSU back in the day. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Josh, thanks for joining us. We got a lot to get to, a lot of SEC football. It's a new conference. I know back in your day, this is not the expanded version of the SEC that we see today. Josh, do you like this, by the way, that we have this expansion in these super conferences?
Absolutely love it. And there's some things I don't like about college football, and I'm glad to join you guys today. But I do like the way that things are kind of stacking up for the conference that I played in with Oklahoma and Texas coming into play. Man, this means more, marquee matchups. I think when you get, Georgia having to go to Austin and play at Texas and Oklahoma, going to LSU and playing in Tiger Stadium. Those are matchups that we've never seen in those particular arenas. except for maybe in playoff type scenarios. So I think it just adds up another dimension. When you talk about rivalry games now in the SEC, you think about the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl, but now you got Red River rivalry inside the conference, and Texas is playing Texas A&M again. And those are some of the good things that are going to come out of this. And like I said, there are some things that are happening in college football, as you know, and everybody else knows, with the NIL deals and money, to these, happening all over the place for these players in the transfer portal. Those are some things that really scare me about college football. But I think when you look at the slate of games and the magnitude of some of these games, boy, people are going to get super excited, and they're going to forget about all that other stuff and latch on to some of these great atmosphere, stadium games that are going to happen and home and home type stuff that we haven't seen before, which would be fun.
All right, Joe. Josh already gets the vote of approval from me because I was kind of down on it, and now he's got me hyped up for all these new rivalries.
Right? You can't wait to see the Sooners.
Now I want to see them all.
Stadium,
absolutely.
Right? Josh, man, this is fun having you on. I mean, you would come on my college radio show all the time back in the day. Now we're in the big leagues. This is a blast, man. So thank you for hopping on. I want to talk about your old coach, Nick Saban, because SEC media days are going on right now. And Saban caught a lot of flack for not putting his Crimson Tide in the SEC championship game. He predicted Georgia, Texas. It's hard to go against those two. They're the two favorites right now in the SEC. Yeah. Who do you see winning this conference? Is it the favorite, the Bulldogs, at 2-1, or is it someone who may have a little more value who could sneak in there?
The thing about Georgia is they got to go to Texas and play in the regular season. And then like Nick Saban announced the other day, they would play again in that scenario, which would be tough to beat a team twice. But Georgia's stockpiled, as we know, and are favorites to win the entire national championship. They also go to Ole Miss, which is a tough road game because Ole Miss is getting better and better every year with Lane Kiffin, and they got Jackson Dart and the quarterback there that's going to play at the next level. I think Ole Miss presents a lot of problems for a lot of teams, especially defensively, because Lane can move the ball. He's a play calling machine offensively, but so is Sarkisian at Texas. And I think that's why Saban gave Texas the nod to play in the big game at the end of the year in Atlanta. Would be Sarkisian, the quarterback, Quinn Ewers. They've got a backup in Arch Manning that is very probably capable of leading that team if something happened to Quinn Ewers. And the SEC is now going to be like the NFL. Every week's going to be tough. We talk about across the board, but you better have a backup quarterback that can deliver. And I think Texas does, they're stockpiled at that position and in that quarterback room with Arch backing up Quinn Ewers. So I do like those two teams. Bama with a new coach, a lot of transfers. They're going to, kind of wait to see, how that's going to pan out. I think their one loss over under total in Vegas is 9.5 when you got Georgia at 10.5. Georgia's always had problems with Nick Saban coach Bama teams, but because Nick Saban's not there anymore, Kirby Smart, you got to give him the edge over everybody in the conference. And I like Georgia to win it all if they don't lose Carson Beck to injury, their quarterback.
All right, Josh, you sold me on the conference expansion. Now, can you sell me on the expansion of the college football playoff to 12? Because I think the myth is this gives everybody a chance, right? Does it really? Or does it just help the bigger boys make sure, hey, they could lose two and still get in this thing?
Yeah, the thing is, it's what's going to be fun is it's like in the College World Series, right? You get eight teams, and you saw four ACC, four SEC. And I think that a lot of that is going to happen because the SEC strength of schedule, the power of the conference, and then you've got, of course, the Big Ten and the strength of schedule and the power of the conference. You're going to see more teams come from those divisions that don't win the division, and maybe that second, third, and fourth team in that division still get opportunities. And what's crazy about it is at the end of last year, we saw Georgia, of course, lose to Bama. They don't get in the playoff, and then they go boat race Florida State in the arms. And it's like Georgia's the best team in the country. Right.
Right?
At the end of the year, they were healthy. They weren't when they lost that last game, but they had a month prepared for Florida State and hammered a team. Now, Florida State was injured, and their quarterback was down, but they made them look. I went to the ball game. It was 50-7 at half or 50-3 at half. It wasn't even a close matchup. I'm like, Georgia would have been favored in a neutral environment against anybody last year. And that's against any of those playoff teams. So I think, and they got left out. So I think this is the situation there's going to be situations like that that are happening left and right. And I think those fifth through eight teams, and like a team like LSU, and I talk about LSU not only because I went there, but they can beat anybody on any given Saturday. And you're going to have teams like that that can rise up, like an A&M that could rise up and beat a Georgia at any time if Georgia has an off week. So I like this format a lot. I think it gives everybody an opportunity. I think teams like Oregon going over into the Big 12, maybe they don't win the conference, but they're the second best team in the conference at the end of the year to Ohio State this year. That's my prediction. And I think, you know, having them in the playoff scenario with a Dillon Gabriel kid that is going to break the all-time passing record in college football if he stays healthy this year, and all-time passing yards, give him a chance to play in a big atmosphere game, and you never know what can happen. So I love that there's more games. It goes longer into the January. I love all that, man, because I love college football just like you guys do.
Josh, I'm glad you brought up your LSU Tigers and also Dillon Gabriel in the same breath there, because I want to look at this Heisman leaderboard. And there is no clear favorite. Like, everyone coming into last season thought Caleb was going to repeat. He was a really short favorite. Right now, your favorites, Carson Beck and Dillon Gabriel, are plus 800. But if you go down the list a little bit, Garrett Nussmeier getting the chance to start for your Tigers, 22-1. There's some really good value there. Can you make a case for him? What are we going to see from this kid? Who do you like for the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I love him. I think he stayed around. He's paid his dues. A lot of kids transfer if they don't get playing time. And, you know, it's a gamble, because you never know at the end of the day when your time comes, if there's not another transfer or five-star. When you're at a program like LSU that will come in and potentially compete with you. It's like Jaden Daniels did at LSU, or like even Joe Burrow came in and took someone's position at LSU when he transferred in from Ohio State. So when you're in a five-star program, you're a quarterback or in any position, really, all they're trying to do is stockpile the position as much as they can. I mean, look at what Lane Kiffin's done at Ole Miss. He's got two or three guys that are big-time starters. Walker Howard, who's going to back up Jackson Dart, was a five-star guy, right? Well, Nussmeier backed up Jaden Daniels. He was a five-star guy a couple of years ago. And so he's paid his dues. I really like – he's not going to be the runner that Jaden Daniels is, but he throw the football. He's a coach's son like Joe Burrow. His dad has been a coach forever. He grew up in football. He understands the game, and he's going to get it to the right guy. And we got skilled players out the wazoo. We got two rounders on the offensive line, too, which is going to really solidify what he can do. So I think I really like Nussmeier. I don't have him winning the Heisman. I don't even know if I got him in New York.
Thank you, Josh. Great stuff. LSU, by the way, plus $1.20 to make the college football playoff. Thanks for joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. We were talking big.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Continue this edition of Sharp Money. Joe Cirillo, Dave Ross here at the fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Joe, I'm getting more and more frustrated as the morning goes on, because I keep looking. We're not quite done with the first round yet.
Oh, you're talking about golf?
Yeah, over there at the Open Championship. British Open.
I wasn't sure if you were frustrated about golf or about this headset ruining your beautiful hair.
You know what? This is the moneymaker. This is we paisans. This is what we got. We have good hair. Great hair.
I love Bar Canada. I love the D. I mean, Andiamo, right across the way from us, is my favorite restaurant. The only thing about doing shows here that I don't love, as opposed to Circa, is the headsets. Yeah. Because, I mean, this is how we make our money.
Well, look at that shot. Now, that's a cool-looking shot.
You know, it's unique as heck. It's fun. Doing a live show from a bar. Like, we're getting paid right now to do this stuff.
I mean, come on.
This is the kind of thing I would have done 5 years ago
for
free.
Don't say that.
Yeah.
Don't ever say that, Joe. By the way, we had to check out Andiamo's on the way in. You're going to be partaking tomorrow.
Oh, Friday night. Yeah, of course. Have to. That's become...
You are doing Vegas right, my friend. For the first week, you're doing it.
You
pace yourself well.
Yeah.
You end up on Andiamo's. You're going to have a great time.
I've had some night, like Monday night, I was, you know, in my room, lights off, 8:30. I mean, you know, because I was like, hey, it's going to be a long week. But Friday night's my last night here. You got to cap it off with an Andiamo dinner. If you do that every night, you're going to, you know, go through your bankroll.
Yeah.
But Friday night, you got to go out with a bang.
And you and I Tuesday night had a pretty good time up there at Circus Swim with a couple cold ones.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun with the Padres people. It was a great time.
Absolutely great. Speaking of baseball, let's look at the second half here and try to figure out maybe who might be the National League's number one seed. Now, I know everybody's going to say, well, right now, the betting favorite's got to be the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
And you can understand why. Right now, with the best record in baseball, they are minus $2 to go ahead and be that number one seed, if you will, in the National League. Now, you can see why the Dodgers, plus 225, the second betting choice. The Braves, why it's Braves, at plus 650 would be the third betting choice. And then the, come on, Brew Crew is the long shot at 17-1. We're not playing that, right, Joe?
Crazy number. The number is the only thing that makes me look at it and go, can they get there? But no, we're not playing that.
They can't get there unless they keep hitting the grand slam every day like they were in the first half of the season.
Right, which is ironic because they play a lot of small ball. They play more small ball. I mean, you know, this is a team that hits more singles and steals more bases and sacrifice bunts. Like, Pat Murphy is really winning with some old school ball down there.
They really are. And look, kudos to the Brewers, because I didn't see this coming at the beginning of the year, that we'd even be having this conversation at the All-Star break, that the Brew Crew could be in line potentially with a great second half to be the number one seed. Nor did I really see the Phillies. And look, their pitching's been spectacular so far. And then when you've got, you can win without Schwarber and Harp in the lineup, when they're out and you still win, then you get those guys back. I don't know. Like, I think we all thought it was going to be the Dodgers, Braves, and everybody else. Can we now say it's Phillies, Dodgers, and everybody else?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, the Braves, I actually don't like, you know, the Brewers are only enticing because of the number, but if you take a step back, they're not going to surpass the Phillies.
No.
The Braves, I think they should, their number should be more of a long shot. I think that number's a little too short for them. I mean,
a lot you factor of bias in the, that answer there. I was next to Mets fans here.
Yeah, but hey, I hate the Phillies and the Braves equally, man. I am an equal opportunity hater.
Wait,
EOH.
I think we hate the Braves more, don't we?
Here's the difference,
we have to.
Right?
Okay.
No. So here's the difference, I think, between our age.
Okay. Oh.
In my lifetime, I probably hate the Phillies more because I'm born 98.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Mets ended that Braves run of 14 straight division titles in 06, which was a blast. I mean, it ended horrifically, but 06 was a great season. I was an 8-year-old, you know? Well, and then the Phillies took it from us at the end of the year, 07, 08. So I actually probably grew up hating the Phillies more than the Braves.
You're not scarred by 99. Octavio Dotel still in the bullpen. Can we pull Kenny Rogers out of the game? And we never did. And then the Braves come back and beat us in 99. Like, that really hurt that year.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So maybe more scar tissue for the older guy. But you're right. We hate them both equally.
I enjoy 2022 way more.
Wow. By the way, you guys won it without Acuna Jr.
I know.
How did that happen? And can they really
because,
do it again?
Alex Anthopoulos, the GM, did a great job.
Yep.
Instead of, you know, selling some pieces off, like, hey, we're just going to surrender going to next year, they were aggressive.
They were.
And, you know, the Braves that year, I remember it was, they would get to 500, then one game below, get to 500. They couldn't get above 500. And what they did was they retooled the outfield because they lost Marcell Ozuna.
That's
they
right.
lost Acuna. They went and got Jock Peterson, who had three home runs in the postseason, including the go-ahead home run against the Brewers in Game 3. You go out and get Adam Duvall, who had two home runs in the World Series, including a grand slam. You get Eddie Rosario, who was red hot against the Dodgers. I mean, you couldn't get him out. Hit a go-ahead home run in Game 6. And then Jorge Soler, who hit, it was that home run that he hit against the Astros, is still going. So they got four guys that all made contributions in the postseason.
And that's why I wonder, at plus 650, if Anthopoulos does something similar to that. Like, you look, Spencer Strider's not walking through the door. Acuna Jr.'s not walking through the door in the second half of the season. They're out for the year. But I just wonder if he tinkers before the trade deadline. I don't know what the Dodgers are going to do. They might have to restaff their whole pitching right now with the injuries they have in L.A., and they probably will.
They need to be aggressive. I take the Braves, I think, more seriously right now than I take the Dodgers.
Really?
Yeah, I still think the Phillies run away with it, and that's why, to me, you can't play this. You can't lay $2 on that. I don't think anyone's going to surpass the Phillies, but I think the Braves may have a better record than the Dodgers, just similarly to what's going on in the American League East.
Mm-hmm.
You could have the two best records, and then one of them gets the four seed.
And also another thing, as much as the Braves have really struggled with injuries, well, you know, Acuna, Strider, Matzik out, and then Michael Harris, they will at least get back. As much as I've complained about the injuries, it's nothing compared to the Dodgers. The Dodgers' injuries have been brutal.
They really have been.
The Braves' big problem, in addition to injuries, is that their stars are not performing, the guys who are healthy. Matt Olson is having a really down year. Now, I don't think anyone saw 54 home runs in the forecast again, but he's having a down year. Austin Riley's having a down year. If anything, Ozzie Albee's keeping them afloat. Mm-hmm. A guy like Jared Kalenich, who started slow, he's kind of keeping them afloat. So it's not so much Riley and Olson as it is the ancillary pieces. I take the Braves seriously. I just don't think anyone's catching
Philly. the only time I'll correct you. Kelnick. You got to get the respect for the man from Waukesha, Wisconsin.
We have
Wisconsin.
No respect for Kelnick because he's a Mets farmer.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
But he's from Wisconsin. He's from my
Diaz
neck of the woods.
We had a deal.
Which I'd make that trade 10 times over.
We actually won that deal.
Yeah.
We won that one. Well, that wasn't you guys. That was Seattle. It didn't matter to you guys. Let's look at the American League here because this is interesting to me that the Yankees are the betting favorite here, but you can get plus money here for the number one seed for the Yanks. At plus $1.30, of course, they're going to start the second half of the year a game behind Baltimore, which is the second betting choice. You see the Guardians at plus +310. They've kind of come back to earth just a little bit. Yeah, 21 games over 500, easy for me to say. And then you got the long shots at the Twins, 13-1. The Astros, a great late rush to get four games over 500. And then the Red Sox, who I know we've talked about, we don't really take them seriously in the East. Is it as simple, Joe, as saying who wins the AL East will be the number one seed?
It's never that simple, but I do agree with that line of thinking because the Cleveland Guardians were beneficiaries of one of, I believe, the three easiest schedules in baseball in the first half of the season. Here in the second half, Cleveland's going to have, I believe, one of the five most difficult schedules in baseball. So, you know, they already got, I think, 9 out of 12 against the White Sox out of the way.
Right.
That's going to slow them down a bit here in the second half that they don't have Chicago on that schedule as much as they did in the first half. So, yeah, I am taking Cleveland out of it, even though right now, I mean, hey, in the loss column, I think that's the best winning percentage in the American League right now, right? They're a half game ahead of the Orioles, and I always look when I look at standings at the loss column.
Yep.
That's what takes precedent for me. I do think it is the winner of the AL East, and so this is why I love this betting market, and I love taking a step back and assessing different betting markets and the best way to find an edge to get ahead of the books, because if you were to bet the AL East champion right now, you're laying $1.35 if you like the Yankees, mm-hmm. and you're only getting plus +115 on the Orioles. Now, I'm not going to make that future bet right now. I have my plus +190 on Baltimore from February,
there
and that's
go.
What I'm going to ride with. But I can best my plus +190 by taking Baltimore to get the one seed at better than 2-1, plus +210 you just saw on your screen. And if you're not me and you like the Yankees, well, instead of laying $1.30, you're getting $1.30 by taking them to be the one seed. So always evaluate essentially different markets or different ways of making the same bet. I think mm-hmm. there is a very good chance the one seed comes out of the AL East. And so instead of playing a division winner, you can play one of those two teams to get the one seed and the odds will be in your favor.
That's why the show is called Sharp Money. That's a very sharp handicap right there, because that's exactly right. If you want to play, don't play the Orioles to win the division, right? It's a small plus number. Play that plus +210 to get the number one seed. Again, very similar bet here. Again, could they get run down by the Guardians? Probably, but I think you outlined how tough their schedule is going to be. Maybe the quietest team in baseball that's 12 games over 500 is the Wynn Twins. And they did a lot of winning after the Guardians got off to that great start. And I think people forgot about Minnesota a little bit. What do you make of the Twins? Do they have staying power here?
So my issue with the Twins is, first off, can they beat good teams? Now, I know that the Twins and Yankees are in much different positions than they were when they played. The Yankees went 6-0 against them. I think the Yankees' winning percentage against Minnesota in my lifetime is like .690. It's absolutely absurd. But similarly to my issues with the Guardians and their starting pitching, I don't trust the Twins' starting pitching. Everyone says, oh, well, Pablo Lopez is going to come back. That's not a sure thing. Yeah, he's got good strikeout numbers. He's better than 10 Ks per nine, and I think that's a little inflated by a couple outings that were outliers, like 14 against Oakland. But Pablo Lopez has an ERA over 5. Bailey Ober has an ERA of about 4.5. Chris Paddock stinks. I mean, the Minnesota Twins pitching really worries me. Their bats are electric, but maybe we could have some fun and look at playing them for a 4 seed.
Ah,
I wouldn't go for a 1 seed.
It sounds like a tease. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about that. Besides just the number 1 seeds, what we might forecast in the second half of Major League Baseball. Come on back. It's Sharp Money here on VSiN.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make those wagers, you know what to do. Go to VSiN.com. You're going to get your best bets, your betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. They vary by state. Betting tools, betting guides, they are there for you each and every day. And again, second half of Major League Baseball, getting ready to begin in earnest. You've got to check out VSiN.com each and every morning. Back alongside Joe Serralo, Dave Ross here as we continue our conversation from the deep in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, downtown. Come on out and say hi. We're friendly people.
Dude, downtown's great. Awesome. I like it better down here than the Strip. I just made my first trip here in April. So this is my fourth time in Vegas. First two times I was on the Strip, didn't know anything about Fremont, about downtown. I like it more here than the Strip. The Strip's cool. Kind of a mess. I never went pre-COVID, but since COVID, I feel like the Strip's just a mess.
Real Vegas, and then you're getting touristy Vegas. Yeah, right? That's the difference.
It's like, you know, New York City. Like,
it's like Times Square.
Yeah, there you go.
Which, I mean, I lived in the city. Yeah. I would never go to Times Square.
And I will say, the city, downtown, they did a really good job over the last, like, 20 years of really doing, you know, making it more local friendly, the arts district.
Yep.
I would say it's a lot of fun. When I was growing up, you never went downtown. It's like,
People on the Strip, those are the same kind of people that go to Italy and look for a restaurant that has chicken parm. You know, like, you know.
Come on, Dave. I heard you're a big fan of Sbarro's too, right?
No, I'm not my buddy Jake Asman. He's another personality from the same hometown as me who says Sbarro's is the best pizza in New York, and he's nuts.
Well, I just see Steve Carell from The Office, right? Let me get an authentic New York slice, and he goes to Sbarro. It's one of the best bits ever. Let's talk more about these seedings and some numbers associated with them. Let's start with the National League and those New Yorkers, the Metropolitans. Because during the break, we were talking about this, different ways, and Joe, I thought you made a great point in the last segment. Some of these future bets in Major League Baseball, instead of betting some of the shorter numbers that you see, when you shop around to alternate markets, you can find better prices. And I think you found one with our Metropolitans. If we believe that Uncle Steve is not going to trade away pieces, that we're in this thing for the long haul, and the Metropolitans look like a playoff team. Tell the peeps what you think might be a better way to handicap this.
Yeah, so I had some time this morning. I was doing my, you know, handicapping, my show prep, crunching numbers. And, you know, we all know, because I've said it on the show numerous times this week, I like the Mets to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now, that best price you're going to get is plus $1.35. But if you take the Mets, and on your screen you've got the odds for the 4 seed, I'm not going to jump the gun on that one just yet, but if you take the Mets to get the 5 seed, they're 4-1, or the 6 seed, they're plus +450. And if you do a half a unit on the Mets to get the 5 seed and a half a unit on the Mets to get the 6 seed, you'll actually profit more if they do get one of those 2 seeds than if you put a full unit on the Mets to make the playoffs plus $1.35. So it's what I said about the Orioles, Yankees, the 1 seed in the AL East.
Very smart.
Just shopping around, you're essentially making the same bet. You're just saying, hey, I don't think they're catching Atlanta. So if I think they're making the playoffs, I think they're getting the 5 or 6 seed, I'm going to play those both half a unit instead of a full unit on them to make the playoffs. Try to get a little bit of a better profit margin there when the season wraps up.
And this is kind of what we were talking about with the Braves and Anthopoulos as the GM. What will he do? I guess the question for us, Joe, as Metropolitan backers, is what do the Mets do? Because we've talked about it. I loved your list the other day that maybe Max Scherzer, maybe there's a reunion in sorts with the Metropolitans if he's on the trade deadline.
And I think that's a bit of a long shot, but it's entertaining, and that's why it was on the list. You know?
But it's a possibility, right?
It is.
If Texas decides to deal somebody like that, would the Mets, do you think, make a big splash? Because I think Uncle Steve, as we like to call him, was more inclined to trade away pieces. But now with the Mets 3 games over 500, I think he's more inclined to say, well, at least stand pat and maybe add to this roster. And then those 4 or 5 seeds, or at least the 5, 6, really are in play.
That's what you got to do. After last year's fire sale, the Mets really revamped their farm system. It's top 10 farm system, at worst top 12 in baseball. That's like worst case scenario. And if you look at the construction of this roster, they've got some vets, some, you know, guys like Francisco Lindor, who's not going anywhere. Starling Marte is going to create a need in right field.
Yep.
But they've also got a lot of young talent. You know, who's coming up taking a job from Francisco Alvarez anytime soon? Mark Vientos might have kicked Brett Beatty.
How about that?
Oh, I mean, it's bizarre. I was so out on Vientos. I wanted them to get rid of Vientos last deadline when I wanted them to buy.
He's starting to blossom with playing time.
He absolutely is. And there's no doubt in my mind that because of all of the return they got at last deadline, they're going to be buyers this deadline. Think about it. They got Acuna for Max Scherzer.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have to give up anything near that if they wanted to get Scherzer back for a couple months. That was a year and a half of Scherzer, and he was having a better year than he's having this season. Good numbers this season, but just 27 innings pitched. So we'll see if it's Scherzer. If not, I think it's definitely going to be the bullpen. They've already been linked in rumors with Carlos Estevez, the closer for the Anaheim Angels, who last year was absolutely otherworldly until he had a collapse there like halfway through August. But he turned in 4 months of incredible baseball a season ago as a top-notch all-star closer. They're definitely going to make a splash and be buyers in this one. And that's why I would take those bets to make the 5 or 6 seed.
when you look at the rest of the National League, and, you know, we were just with some of our Padre new fans and friends up there a couple days ago, but they're such an interesting team because it looked like they were a lock to make the playoffs and then really had a swoon right before we got to the All-Star break. What do we make of the Padres? Because, look, they said, all right, Juan Soto, we're not gonna keep him. We're not going to try to make a big effort to keep him in San Diego. We'll go a different direction. What do you make of the Pods now? Do they have to be buyers at the deadline to make sure that they're a playoff team?
They do. I just question their farm system depth and their ability to be effective buyers. You know, I mean, they have to add to the bullpen, right?
Yeah,
that's not
they
even
do.
Up for debate. Their bullpen stinks. It's just as bad, if not worse, than that of the Mets right now. The Padres, I was out on preseason, and I'm still out on them. Mm. I don't think that they're making the playoffs.
Wow.
I like their division rival, the Diamondbacks. You know how high I am. They were fifth on my World Series contender list the other day because Arizona's starting pitching is now going to get healthier with the returns of Merrill Kelly and Eduardo Rodriguez coming back off the IL. Zach Gallen just came back off the IL himself. I think the D-backs are a more legit contender than the Padres. And obviously, you know, while I think most fans and most, you know, casual viewers out there would think the Padres are better than Arizona, the odds makers have them pretty even. Look at those odds for the sixth seed. Padres, yep. Mets, D-backs, all plus 450. So if I'm going to buy on two of those three, it's the Mets and D-backs. Not the Padres, not the Cardinals, who are next up at plus 550 on that list. I really fear Arizona more than San Diego, despite the fact that impressive feat for the Padres, all three of their starting outfielders just made the All-Star team.
Speaking of the All-Star team, we saw Paul Skeens start the All-Star game on Tuesday night. The Buccos, the battling Bucks, 12-1 to get that sixth seed. We've talked about it a couple days ago. It's just about who's going to get shut down, who's going to be allowed to pitch through into September. That's why they are so intriguing, I think, at 12-1. Because if you told me that Jones and Skeens are going to be pitching throughout the rest of the regular season, I'd love that number.
Yeah.
I just don't know that we can make that declaration.
I mean, you really have to see so much of what the Pirates do is going to be decided here in the next 10, 11 days.
Wow.
Because if they really think, if they go on a little winning streak here and they're in a wild card position or they're a game out, like right now, what are they in the wild card? They're two games out?
That's it.
I mean, maybe then they buy. They've been linked to Jazz Chisholm, but there are also a lot of teams linked to Jazz Chisholm. You know, the Yankees, the Guardians, the Phillies in division, they need a center fielder.
Yep.
I don't think the Marlins will give them to Philadelphia. But it'll be interesting to see if Pittsburgh buys or sells. That could determine, you know, a month later what they end up doing with Skeens.
Only 1.5 games.
How about that?
Lost column, Wyatt. Lost column. That's what we look at.
But like when I was doing these graphics today,
yeah,
I didn't realize like how close the Pirates are there.
That's the point, right?
Yeah.
But we just don't know what they're going to actually do because I know everybody's freaked out about Paul Skeens and Jones pitching too much as rookies, hitting that rookie wall, and all of a sudden blowing their arms out. I don't buy it.
Skeens looks so effortless out there. I mean,
we talk about this. I hate that. Well, we got to be careful with them. He can blow his arm out at any point of
when
the
you have
year.
When you have a no-hitter through 7 innings in Milwaukee, the team you're theoretically trying to chase down, and he's thrown 99 pitches at that juncture.
He could have come out for one more inning.
Absolutely. So when they do that, that's a flag to me that says they're just not going to push it. They're not going to push the kid. And that gives me pause to bet any Buccos futures in the second half.
Or they say, we'll sacrifice the no-hitter, but we want to, you know, save some innings and keep him for a playoff race, maybe. That's the way I saw it.
But I will say, like, they get into the playoffs, so, I'd be scared.
Short series, because we haven't even talked about, because he's not a young arm, Mitch Keller, who would probably be their number two ahead of Jared Jones. I mean, you go Skeens, Keller, Jones in a short series rotation. That's scary. I'll take a flyer on him every single series.
Like if they played the Dodgers in a NLDS, because the Dodgers I think are going to get a bye
with the entire world rooting for Pittsburgh.
Yes,
outside of LA.
Pittsburgh? Yeah, I'm taking a flyer on him to win the series.
Wow.
I mean, the Reds just swept the Dodgers. The Pirates, I don't know if they took 2 out of 3 or if they lost 2 out of 3. The Pirates played. Well, you know, the Reds, I mean, that was my famous line, right? Before I was a host of Visa, when I came on for a guest spot in the wintertime, I said, hey, the Dodgers will win 110 and then lose to Cincinnati in the NLDS. That's what the Dodgers do.
Boy, I hope that's right, because I got the Reds to make the playoffs at plus 650. I'll take that ticket.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I think Pittsburgh would be very live in a series against the Dodgers. Not so much the Phillies, maybe probably not the Braves, but the Dodgers, yeah.
I think that the National League is so wide open. I think you're right on that. The next 2 weeks, as we get to the trade deadline, these teams have to have good 2 weeks in order for the owners and the GMs to say, all right, we got to push in some chips and make a run for it now. So I'll be very curious to see how this shakes out in the next 2 weeks. When we come back, shipping up to Boston, Danny Vreeland's going to join the program here talking all things UFC. Got a fight card Saturday, UFC 304 in just 2 weeks. Come on back. It's Sharp Money here on Visa. We'll be right back.